Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two. It's going to be kind of a sad hour, but an hour of great gratitude to a man who has just left us, Mr. William Mills Tompkins, 93, who came along and came into my life several years ago, thanks to Frank Chile and, of course, George Filer, who are both standing by now. Bill Tompkins came forward with information and material that was staggering. He was apparently given the green light to go ahead and tell his truth about what he had experienced in World War II, prior to and after World War II, and up to the present time. He was an eyewitness to the Battle of Los Angeles. He knew all about the secret space program that we run as a dual platform of space exploration, in addition to our satellite program and our once very robust Apollo program, which suddenly just went away. Well, Bill explained why. Bill was an amazing man on many different levels, and I don't know how we're ever going to replace him. I don't think it's possible. Thank God you can hear dozens of hours of him on this radio station on the homepage at rents.com. Look over on the right-hand side, and you will see William Mills Tompkins. He wrote one book. A second book, I believe, is finished and hopefully will be published fairly soon. Bill was in wonderful health at the MUFON convention. People who know him said he never looked happier. This is just in July, and he is here in August, gone, already taken from us. But what he left behind is awesome, and it will always be here for those who want to simply listen and learn the truth. He was an amazing man. So with that, let me stop and welcome Frank Chile first. Frank was the man who put this together with Bill Tompkins to allow Bill to come on this program so many times and be the first here to disclose things that were never even imagined by many people before. Frank, welcome back.
Jeff, I never wanted to think of this night nor this subject, and here it is upon us.
That summed it up. I'm sure that many people feel the same way who are listening, who didn't know Bill. You talked to him all the time on the phone. He was like a brother to you, and he just was a kind, gentle, caring, extremely astonishing, well-informed man who knew things that most people aren't supposed to know. And yet he stood up and staked out territory and began to share this material with us, and it changed lives. Who knows how many lives were changed by the material that Bill Tompkins shared with us. With that, let me welcome Major George Filer back. Hello, George. Welcome. What are your thoughts about Bill Tompkins, George?
Well, I think he was a great man, had lots of talents people don't, may not realize, but he was an excellent draftsman, had a memory that is absolutely amazing, frankly, that through all the years that all that he had done, working, well, first for the U.S. Navy. He was, you might say, drafted right at the beginning of World War II, and actually even saw UFOs very early in the war, flying over Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I ever told you, but my grandfather also saw him. He was a Beverly Hills chiropractor. But in any case, I had met Bill Tompkins. I was speaking at the MUFON conference some 5 years ago, Dr. Woods introduced me to him, and I was amazed by all the things that he was telling me. And you know, through the years, I kept up with him and talked to him every few months, and he explained all these wonderful things that were happening, I introduced him to Frank, and Frank and he got along really well and been talking all through the years, and of course been on your show and writing, and he's done a wonderful number of things for you know, I think that Jeff runs it on for us as well.
You bet. You bet. You know, the interesting thing about Bill is that he worked with Douglas Aircraft, now Douglas Missiles and Space. Then he went to TRW, and he went to several other prime defense contractors. He was with Douglas for, I guess, almost 10 years, and my father was there at the same time. My father was director of public relations for Douglas Aircraft, and Bill Tompkins was there working in their above top secret projects that went on there in these sequestered, compartmentalized programs that were just amazing. Frank, tell us a little bit more about your dealings with Bill Tompkins.
Well, I'd like to share with you and your audience some of the things he shared with me that he wasn't really public about. He did tell me that he was one of dozens that had been selected by the visitors, and he felt that he was the last of the living individuals that were part of that program. Huh. And he said he had met several of them during the course of his life. And he would tell me how remarkable his mother was. And I said to him, I said, Bill, there's something extraordinary about your mother. And I said, did you ever think that perhaps she was not from here? And he said to me, very matter-of-factly, he said, my mother was a Nordic.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not surprised. His lineage, yeah, sure. An ET mom, why not? Makes sense.
Yes. And he said that the other children that were part of the program, as he was, apparently their mothers were also Nordics. So, and he always spoke glowingly of his mother and how caring she was and protective she was of him, and yet allowed him to be what he wanted to be and what he wanted to realize in his life. And from the time that George introduced me to him, he was as open as anybody could ever expect to be open regarding the most diverse subjects. And it was nothing that was off limits for him to talk about, Jeff. He would be open to discussing any subject or any topic. And I think I shared this privately with you, that when I was living in Southern California, I was coming back from visiting Gabriel Green and some of the other contactees in the high desert area of Yucca Valley. And I was with my spiritual brother, Simon, and a woman, Roberta Herzog, who had a very gifted ability to be able to tune into what's known as the Akashic Records. And she was summoned to go to Mount San Jacinto above Palm Springs.
Right.
So we went up there to about the 6,000-foot level, and we had some incredible experiences. Well, I started telling Bill about this, and he picked up on the thread of what I was discussing, and it's like he was right there with me, and he was describing things before I even told him. He was able to tune into that vibration of that frequency, and this is well before I even knew that the U.S. Navy had a facility at Mount San Jacinto. He revealed that to me later on. But his approach to being able to tune into what I was going to share with him was not invasive at all. It was so complimentary. It's like he was walking right along with me when I was having this experience, and he was able to describe it in perfect detail. And he lost none of that ability that he was gifted with, Jeff. None of that.
How could someone at 93 have what I would quantify as virtual total recall of most everything in his life? It's just like the more we would talk on our programs that you helped put together, the more came back. It was all there. He would just come across it and weave it right into the narrative. Nothing was made up. You knew that. You could tell the man was telling the absolute truth of his life experience. Yeah, yeah. Just extraordinary.
He would ask me, he said, Frank, send me pictures, send me articles. He said, these are triggers. And he said, they're bringing back recall the things that I need to share on Jeff's program and share with the public. And almost everything I turned him onto, They were acting as triggers of recall, and he was bringing back phenomenal detail, especially the information about Divas. And he could describe what the folks were wearing in the meetings, down to the color of their ties at each of the meetings. I mean, it was just, his memory was photographic.
Amazing. When you were at conferences, George, and Bill was there, the recent big MUFON one, of course, but how was he received when he first showed up?
I knew Dr. Bob Woods pretty well, and actually he asked me to put together briefing on Mars, and then he brought Bill over to, you know, introduce him to me, and Bill started talking for like an hour, you know, about the working. Well, apparently he started out very young making models of ships.
Right.
But he made them in such detail that the Navy became very interested in him. In other words, how could he have such great representations of these ships in all these kind of details?
I have a picture of him on the at the top of the homepage for any of you who are interested or haven't seen it yet. Go up and look, and you'll see Bill holding up one of his models of an aircraft carrier. Now, he had no plans. He would go out and take a tour of these ships, like at Long Beach Harbor, and he would pace the deck, and he would remember the measurements, the width, the length, and try and figure the height, and he'd go back and make these astonishing models. And the Navy found out about that, and they assumed he must have been getting inside information. But he wasn't. He was just that gifted.
Right at the beginning of the war, in any case, he was, I don't know if the right word is drafted, or, you know, they asked him to join because of this ability. And then he was introduced to this Admiral Rick Abata, and was in a very important position. And this Admiral had intelligence officers who were going to Germany and finding out the latest information that the Germans had.
Mm-hmm.
Which included these, what we would call flying saucers. And he would bring this information back. And then it was Bill's job to take it around to the various aviation companies and keep them up to date on the latest operations of what the Germans were doing.
He was delivering top secret intelligence data gathered from these people, and he would—he was a pilot. He had learned to fly. He would fly himself most of the times around to these locations with a valise or a satchel or more of this top secret debriefing information from World War II. Big stuff.
Apparently, the Germans were working with the aliens. And they set up a base in Antarctica. And at the end of the war, a lot of the key people went down to this base, probably aboard submarines or these UFOs, and built a base there. And he had all this information that he was, you know, providing to us, which was extraordinary, frankly.
Were you at the July MUFON event? You must have been.
Not the most recent one.
Oh, you missed it. Okay. Well, that was...
You've been
a fixture, yeah. Frank, tell us about his...
Clarification. Yeah. If I could offer a clarification. Bill told me that he was drafted into the Navy, but his father made an agreement with the Navy that my son will not see action, and as soon as the conflict is over, he will be released back to civilian life. So they granted that request. So he was not to see action. He was not to be put in harm's way.
Uh-huh. How was his reception at the recent MUFON National Conference?
I understand it went very well. The people were very anxious to hear him speak, to be able to introduce themselves and to get photographs and autographs of his book, and asking him about what was coming up in book two, which is going to be some extraordinary information. Matter of fact, you helped guide him in choosing the final cover for this, and hopefully they will run with that cover. And I believe Bob Wood's going to edit the manuscript that is complete now.
Nice.
And hopefully we'll see that before the end of the year.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yes, indeed. I've heard, you know, wonderful things about him. He was well received by the MUFON people.
He was also married to a wonderful lady, Frank. You want to tell us about her?
My gosh, she is a lovely lady, Mary, and I think I sent you some photos taken of her and
yes.
him at the conference. And he is just radiant and beaming with joy and happiness. And everybody I know who saw him there said, he had the energy of an 18-year-old, and he was wheeling Mary around because she had difficulty walking, wheeling her around in a wheelchair.
Uh-huh.
And as often as he would talk about the loveliness of the Nordic women that he worked with in these secret think tanks, he would always tell me, Frank, I got the peach, the best of the crop. Mary is better than them. He said that she is the one delight of my life. I never had anybody else I would ever go after except her. And when I would call him, he'd say, I have a date tonight with my favorite girl. I'm going to take her to dinner. Then I'm going to take her out for dessert. Oh, my God. And he would tell me how much he enjoyed taking her to get her hair done on Thursday and taking her for little rides. Uh-huh. And she told me today, she said, Frank, he would say that to you and to others. He would always put me up on a pedestal. And I said, it's because how much he loved you and you meant the world to him. And they were together for, I guess, like close to 60 years.
Well, that's not going to happen anymore in this culture. No. I'm thinking back to the, I don't know how many hours we have, thank goodness, in the archives that people can listen to any time at all. I enjoy Bill and be fascinated with what he had to say. But even more fascinating was his father, his life with his dad in Hollywood in the 20s. Yeah. When Hollywood was at its early peak, his father, what was his name? He went by initials. S.W. Tompkins, I think. All right.
Yes, that's
S.W. Tompkins was a giant in Hollywood. Now, S.W. and his partner bought the biggest movie studio in Hollywood in the 20s. They were on top of the world. And then because S.W. Tompkins didn't happen to be Jewish, and Hollywood is a Jewish enterprise, they eventually forced him out and just broke him, really. It made his life very difficult. But he was a big man. And we did a whole program, a couple hours on that. You can hear that in the archives. If you go to the right-hand column, scroll down, you'll see William Tompkins, and you'll see his Hollywood visit with us as well. And that was particularly fun. Just an amazing story.
With documentation, and we had documentation we had found.
Correct. Yeah. Yep. Yep. No, he didn't exaggerate. He didn't make anything up at all. And of his own experiences, his program that we did with respect to the Battle of Los Angeles was just a keeper. That's a classic.
Yes.
And we're going to play a little bit of that to give you an idea of what Bill had to say, how he described what really happened at the Battle of L.A., which was not what the media, big surprise, was not what the media was trying to tell people. That's what the media did. George, your thoughts on what Bill Tompkins had to say about the Battle of Los Angeles?
Well, what I remember is that there was a lot of important people, you might say, besides him that were saying this, generals and admirals and so on, and that they're trying to get this all together and, you know, realize what was going on, that it was very significant. People didn't, I believe it was 1942.
Yep, February.
And these large craft were over Los Angeles, and I guess they thought they were Japanese since the war was, you know, already on, and they were firing at them and virtually all night long with the huge spotlights on these.
Right. Right.
Craft, and there are pictures, and even in the Los Angeles papers and so on, they had pictures of the craft, and that they all exist, you know.
Right.
My grandfather, my mother's father, told us about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
That anyone who in Los Angeles or even Southern California area knew had seen these, he couldn't help but, you know, all the noise and the firing of the AK weapons and so on, and, and some of this would fall, you know, and do damage, that kind of thing, and they're trying to destroy these craft, and there's indication from him that at least one and maybe two were knocked down.
Right.
That
there is, I want to point everyone to the top of the homepage and the tribute to Bill Tompkins, and look underneath the two-picture rotation, and you will see right there the recording, the two-hour recording we did on the Battle of LA. And below that, you'll see actual footage, movie footage. Just stunning. I've repeated. They're short clips, but I've repeated them over and over again. And the still pictures and woven them in there, and you can get a look at what he was talking about. Just, it was an enormous spectacle.
And Jeff, you did see footage, that picture footage, and he said, yeah, that's the way it looked.
I mean, it just is amazing. I'm looking at it right now. There's some other documents you'll see as well. So
that's another thing that, well, he had so many stories that appeared wild, if you might say. He was so far advanced from other information that we were getting.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of data to back it up. And Dr. Sala and Dr. Woods and others had, you know, did Freedom Information Act data that also backed up what he said. In other words, he's well worth listening to.
You can, when we come back, I'm going to play, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to play a segment of Bill talking about the Battle of L.A., and I would urge all of you to click on the video link before we come back, get that at least queued up and ready to go, so you can watch this remarkable footage and still pictures woven together of the Battle of L.A. Some of the film is just short clips, little clips, 3-4 seconds. It's just amazing to see all the AA rounds going off and how many were fired and how the searchlights had this object, one big object, trapped right in the beams, the cross beams. They had it. All right, we'll come right back and take a listen to Bill. Okay, let's get right back to our tribute to William Mills Tompkins. Just an amazing man. What a full life, what a rich life, what an unselfish and sharing life he led. He gave so much to us in the last several years, and certainly throughout his life he was that kind of a person anyhow, but getting the national platform and the worldwide platform here and elsewhere, he really just, he grew wings and took off and never stopped. When you look at the pictures on the front page, the model of the aircraft carrier that he's holding, he created that by hand in the late 1930s, before World War II, and it is exact to scale. And when the Navy saw that, there was a display of them put up on, I think, Hollywood Boulevard in some store somewhere. They couldn't believe it. They thought that they had spies on their hands who were actually taking photographs and measurements of their ships, and they didn't want people to know about those things for obvious reasons. But look at Bill holding that up, something he made when he was, 15, 16 years old, just a kid. And it's phenomenal. All of his models are. Frank, tell us more about the models.
Well, what he shared with me was that when they first saw the models in the model shop, and he asked the name of the person who brought them in, of course, he used Tompkins. And when the Navy sent some representatives over, they thought it was the father who had done them, and not suspecting that it was a young boy who was like 13 or 14 who had done those models.
Right.
They were completely astounded by it, and the father didn't know that the son had done it with such exactness. And It was a joy for him to create those models and have something that he could look at. And he, sometimes he didn't even walk to decks, Jeff. He would just drive around the harbor or float around the harbor in a boat and just observe and make mental notes based on his observations.
Wow. George, anything to add before I play this clip?
No, let's see. he told me so many things. One thing, and we haven't gone in this direction, but he seemed very afraid of the reptilians, and that we have visitors.
Didn't like them at all.
Right. And that, in any case, this ability to make these drawings and so on, he used all through his career. And one of the things that he did is the Apollo control room that was used for, you know, by NASA to go into space. He designed that. In other words, he's done wonderful designs through the years for the government and for, you know, Douglas and DRW and so on.
He told the story of how he took the drawings for the control center to the Germans who were running our space program. That was a phenomenal story. You can hear that in the archives as well.
Quite a story.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, his father was S.W. Tompkins, a major Hollywood power, and that's an extraordinary story. So you can hear that one as well. We have, I don't know how many visits we did, but they're just a treasury. All right, here's Bill Tompkins talking about the Battle of Los Angeles, and I would like you again to look at the pictures. I have them of him up on the top of the homepage, and look below them, and you'll find the actual archive. It's a free listen. You can listen anytime you'd like. And you'll also find the link for the footage that you should be watching with this. And it is entitled Live Action Film and Stills of the Battle of L.A. So here we go. Let's listen to Bill for a few minutes. Give you an idea, for those of you who don't know him, what kind of a voice he had, what his demeanor was like. You hear a lot in a voice, and I think you'll like what you hear here. Okay, we got the music intro here. Todd, go ahead and turn our gentleman down, guests, and they can just listen in. We won't hear any extra noise. Have a special program. Back with us tonight for another wonderful conversation is Mr. William Tompkins. Bill has been with us, I don't know how many times now, but he has been obviously nudged to become a main part of the ongoing disclosure of alien visitation, alien occupation, and the fact that we are out in the solar system and the universe with some extraordinary hardware that that we have in deep space. And we've talked about so many things, and you can listen to all of those conversations anytime you'd like just by going to Rents.com, looking over in the right-hand column down to Bill Tompkins. You'll find it right there. The archives are all available. February 25th, 1942. What happened on that date? The Battle of Los Angeles. We're going to talk about that tonight and other things as well with Bill. I've got some videos to show you, which we'll look at as we get going here. And even a newscast that came, I believe, that next morning, February the 26th. It's a recording of a shortwave national newscast dealing with the Battle of Los Angeles and what went on over that city of almost 2 million so many years ago. Hello, Bill. Welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Real good, Vince. Ready to go. This should be really interesting this evening. Yeah. I think everybody's going to enjoy it.
Well, I hope so. And if they don't, they're missing something. Now, let me ask you, and just for you folks who don't know, Bill is, how old are you, Bill?
39. 93 in Next month, it'll be 94.
Wow. I remember when you turned 93. Wow. Seems
yeah,
like
right.
only
okay.
yesterday. We've been working on this project quite a while. The idea of watching something like the Battle of Los Angeles is amazing to my mind. It may be the most watched UFO encounter, and I'm going to call it encounter. It wasn't just a sighting because it lasted a long time, and it involved the American military coastal defenses. World War II, December 7th, had just happened, and this object came over L.A., made one pass, and then made a second pass going back over L.A., and I mean Culver City, the west side, down to Long Beach, the whole thing. Fascinating, and it was shot at by dozens of ground batteries, and the videos you're going to see tonight are extraordinary. How old were you, Bill, when that happened?
Oh, I was still 39.
Okay, good enough. All right. So, in other words, you weren't in the crib with a baby bottle, and you were actually up and able to watch it.
That's right, yes.
Okay. Five people at least died that night, for those of you who don't know. There were fatalities, heart attacks, shrapnel came down. I think there was one automobile crash. This was a big deal. It started at 2:35 a.m. and went on for at least an hour. Big deal. Tell us the story, Bill.
Well, this is really interesting because nothing like this had ever happened. And Jeff, you're describing it as being one of the most important sightings, if you want to call it that, that's ever taken place. And it really is, because you're going to find that there were more than several vehicles involved. Okay. Essentially, my folks had moved to Long Beach, we were living in a very large, expensive home that had been converted to four apartments, and the living rooms downstairs were all 18-foot ceilings, so the second floor is real high, and there was a enormous deck all the way across the back of the house, and we, of course, had an upstairs apartment. So we could overlook a lot of trees and a lot of buildings because we were so much higher.
Right.
Now, we were only four blocks from the beach, but of course, there were other buildings between us and the beach, so we couldn't see the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But around 7:30 in the evening, my brother and I were laying on the floor, and I think we were looking at the newspaper. My dad went out to the bed. My mom and we were visiting her mother back in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was just the three of us. So my dad was out on the back deck, and he told him, he said, "Boys, get out here right now." So we got up and went out to the deck in the back. And there was a small light just above the surface that we could see, which would be buildings and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then this light got a little bit larger, and a very small beam came out of the light and focused down to what would be the ocean, because we couldn't see the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so
what color was the beam, Bill? What color was the beam?
It was almost white.
Okay.
And so this we watched this for like 2 or 3 minutes, and you know, what's this? Because we've never seen anything like that before.
Right.
But then what happened was the little tiny beam came up towards the center of light being straight down, and then came all the way up and went focused directly into our eyes. Now.
Huh.
This has to be something, because it lit up all of the buildings, all of the trees, everything around us was lit up like brighter than the sun. And we couldn't believe what was happening. So the light went out, and the big beam light went out.
Huh.
So now what's really strange here, wait a minute, what's really strange here is we talked about this, we finished dinner, and instead of going to listen to the radio, because we didn't have TV then, we went to bed. We were sort of bored.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to bed early. And then around 1:30, 2 o'clock or something, the aircraft guns went off all around us. And so we're only four blocks from the beach, okay? And my dad was a block warden for that area because the war was on. This was 2 months after the war started.
Right. What city were you living in, Bill? Excuse me. What city?
Long Beach, California.
Right in Long Beach. Okay.
And so I have to say one thing ahead of this, in that Long Beach got a brand new breakwater about 6 months before this event took place. And they moved, the Pacific Fleet moved into that breakwater.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Atlantic Fleet came through the Panama Canal and it joined the Pacific Fleet. So you couldn't believe how many ships, battleships, cruisers, destroyers, aircrafters, just off of Rainbow Pier. Okay.
Wow.
In Long Beach.
Yeah.
And now the war's going, so some of those are gone. But the point was, we're only four blocks from the beach. And what took place was unreal. Because we went outside, everybody in our neighborhood came out into the street. We looked up, and here was one very large circular vehicle. And if you take everybody in the audience, if you'll take your hand and open between your thumb and your fingers, and put your arm above your head, that's how big this thing was. It was not a little spot. Okay.
It's about as big as a baseball.
Right, and it's not the one that was put in the newspaper. There's only really one photograph ever in the newspaper, and that showed eight searchlights shining on a circular whatever.
Right, kind of an oval-shaped object. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's Mr. Bill Tompkins. You can hear the whole program as hour one and hour two. Right underneath his double picture that I have at the top of the page, and do click on the video, live action film, and stills of the battle below that as well. It's just really special to hear his voice. You get an idea of the kindness and the intelligence of the man. Frank, that was quite a description, just the beginning of it.
Jeff, that enthusiasm never left him. And every conversation I ever had with him, that enthusiasm was there. And I never felt as if I was dealing with somebody who was promoting their own ego. I mean, he was speaking matter-of-factly about subjects he had great familiarity with all the time. And just, he wanted you to be aware of it. He said, this is my experience. Let me tell you about it.
He was sharing.
With that kind of enthusiasm all the time. And, yeah. And you know, it just draws you into the conversation. You want to hear more.
He had that effect on people. No matter who he met, if the person was a reasonable person, he was captivating because he had so much to say that was just fascinating.
Jeff, as many times as you had him on your program, the one program that people have highlighted to me that really had an effect on them was when he spoke about the hunting lodge. The hunting lodge.
That was one of the early ones.
That had an effect on everybody who heard that. That was just so profound.
Well, that was... actually, something that, as the crow flies from where I'm sitting right now, probably 30 miles, 35 miles. So, that really rang home with me. George, how was it to hear that little bit of the Battle of L.A. again?
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it, certainly. I think he goes on and says that the one or two craft were brought down.
Yes,
that
he does.
Recovered.
Yes, yes. Yep.
And I think that's significant. You might say it was probably the first ones we had actually captured and realized that so many wards where we were being visited, which I think is significant, obviously. Then it ties in, of course, with the fact that he's getting similar information from the intelligence personnel in Germany, that the UFOs are flying there as well. And apparently the aliens had given the Germans some technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill said that one of them crashed off Long Beach into the ocean. The Navy retrieved it. Another went into the mountains, San Bernardino Mountains, and the Army got that one. So that was that was the gist of it.
And the one that was captured that fell into the sea, he told me, was ultimately taken out to China Lake. And he said he flew the first documents out to China Lake, and they started the underground facility in 1943.
Wow. Wow. That was only 7 weeks after Pearl Harbor. Remember that. Or a little longer than that, 8 weeks.
Yeah. But he said that first craft was brought out there, and he said the Navy jumped on it and took it much further than the Army ever took the recovery and the analysis of their disk.
Right. It's all about the Navy, ladies and gentlemen, because the biggest ocean of all is space. That's why the Navy is out there.
Yes.
Not the Air Force. It's the Navy. Okay, we just have a couple minutes left.
Force, I'd like to tell you we're both out there.
Well, I've heard that, George, and I wish they'd take you out for a ride. You deserve
it. I haven't been for a ride in a long time, but actually, he was a great man, and near as I can tell, he was given permission to reveal a lot of this information. Now,
yes.
And I think that's significant from...
That's a huge development.
Various admirals and so on.
Absolutely. Frank, what did he tell you about getting the green light to go ahead and share all of this?
He said the most recent green light that he got when he was at the that Navy convention 2017 West in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And he said admirals were coming up to him, one, two, and three-star admirals, and addressing him by name and putting their arm around him and really proud about what he was sharing. And he said, Frank, I didn't know these people, but they all knew me. And I said, did any of them give you a negative comment about anything you're doing? He said, no, they were all encouraging. And
so they heard him on this program probably many times, and they knew exactly what he had said.
Exactly, exactly. Wow. And when he said, he made the comment about the technology that Solar Warden has now for the first seven battle groups,
uh-huh.
You can go from Earth to the center of our galaxy in 45 minutes. And he said the next three battle groups were going to be using a more advanced technology. He said they would be using thought to propel the ships, so they could be almost anywhere after the thought is completed.
Hmm. And there is one more book coming. He got his first book out. I think he wanted to have, I forgot how many ultimately, but we're six. We're going to get two. And we have so much in terms of audio that you can hear anytime at all. And it's quite an archive. Quite an archive. Final comment.
Well, if I could share with you and your audience real quick, if I could share this real quick with you.
Sure.
He said to me on many occasions, he said, Frank, there are other planets in our galaxy that are much more beautiful than Earth. He said, there's no discontentment. He said, there's no anger. There's no vice. The weather is not destructive. He said, it's pleasant. And he said, I've seen them. And he said, we will ultimately get to know these places.
It's fine with me. Time to go back to being civilized again, unless it's too late. George, a final comment from you?
Well, he was a great man, and he'd be sorely missed, certainly. And I think what he has to say should be heard by everyone. And know that, we're probably 40 years ahead of where people think we are.
That's
so
a lot of
capabilities.
Good. Thanks for putting that on the table. That's really important. A final comment, Frank, and I am really sorry for the loss of your friend. I know how much he meant to you and how close you were.
I miss him even more than I thought, Bill. And I know at some point I will see him again, as you will see him again, and we will continue our friendship. I met some extraordinary people in my lifetime. Bill was the most extraordinary individual I ever met.
Yeah, I'll agree.
Hey,
George, go ahead.
Well, I felt the eclipse had something to do with him. That I don't know how you can tie that in together, but a great man was lost. And when I'm looking at the eclipse today, I was thinking of him, that he's out there.
Well, that's very appropriate. And I would agree with you. As they say, yes. No coincidences, huh? George, thank you for being here and contributing. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And Frank, thank you. And bless you, Bill Tompkins, wherever you are, and we will see you again. That's for damn sure. Thank you, Frank.
It's been an honor knowing him. What an honor. And thank you for putting him on as often as you did, Jeff. It was so important.
Oh, I couldn't have done anything more pleasing for me on so many levels, and I'm very blessed to do that. All right. Good night, both of you. Thank you.
Good night.
William Mills Tompkins, gone from this planet to a much better place. Believe it. All right. We'll be right back.